Greetings, everyone. This is Jonathan Alexander, editor of College Composition and Communication, and I am really happy to be here with Stephen Freyberg, author of Pretty Bullets, Tracing Transmedia, Translingual Literacies of an Israeli Soldier Across Regimes of Practice. Joining me also is editorial assistant Jens Lloyd. Steve, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So I always like to begin the podcast by asking people to tell us a little bit about how you came to conduct the research in Pretty Bullets. What's the origin story of this? It's such an interesting case study. Tell us about it.
Sure. So the study itself actually goes back probably to 1997, if not sooner, or if not earlier, when I actually was living, I had moved to Israel, or I was living there for a while, and I had really wanted to learn Hebrew. But it was hard because at the same time, everyone I was speaking to also wanted to learn English. So every time I would speak in Hebrew, someone else would respond in English. And it became like this game of one-upsmanship. And so I would return in Hebrew and they would return in English. And it was really sort of like a game of chicken, almost like a test to see whose language was stronger. And so I began to realize that the struggle that we were having was sort of reflective of a wider social struggle. And so I returned in 2007 to Israel, really late 2006 and I think through 2007, as part of my dissertation research, really to look at that struggle. So I was looking at questions such as, when did people use Hebrew? When did they use English? How did the languages mix and why? And I was really looking at those processes both in high-tech companies and also language learning classrooms. And the case study here actually comes from a language learning classroom, really a literature course at Tel Aviv University. So in this literature course, I was looking at unofficial literacy practices and students' home languages and the ways that these became blended into students' academic identities. And the second day of the class, I was sitting next to a guy. He was about 25 years old. He had this long wavy hair. He had a leather jacket. And I asked him, I said, so do you do any sort of writing? It could be in Hebrew or in English outside of class. And as a matter of fact, you know, as I opened the scene with, he took out his backpack and he took out a notebook. And he began literally to walk me through his notebook. It was 40 to 50 pages. It had notes, it had drawings, it had parts of stories. And those stories were linked to other stories and those were linked to artifacts. Mm-hmm. And he literally set all of this on the table for discussion. And so in unpacking his bag, he was really, in a sense, he was sort of unpacking his literate life. And so in looking at this sort of web of objects, I began to connect them. I tried to connect them anyway to a wider sort of web of ideas, of identities, of practices, about ways of thinking and of being in the world. And so this was a conversation that went on for a long, long time. It went on for almost about 4 hours. And it went on so long, unfortunately, that the tape recorder ran out of batteries. And in fact, I had lost almost all of the data. I did have my notes and I had some images as well. But this was actually unfortunate because I was really hoping to go and do a sort of fine-grained tracing of the conversation. And I was really thinking that a close look at the way that the conversation unfolded was really a better way to help me into understanding his complex network. And so I was in Israel at that period about 6 more months, and I met with him 3 more times. And these times the recordings worked, and I tried to recover some of that data, and I got additional data. But in the end, I really left with more questions than answers. And I had questions of, like, how did all this stuff fit together? How is this related to literacy? And then how is it related to the field? And I spent a long time puzzling over this, maybe about 10 years since it's now 2017. But one breakthrough that came to me was when I read Henry Jenkins' work on convergence culture and when he talks about textual poaching. And that was really sort of an aha moment for me because I immediately connected it to his literacy practices. And suddenly I had a framework with sort of theoretical sensitivity and reach that reached into almost every aspect of his literacy practices. And so once I had that, I really began to look in a more fine-grained way at sort of how this worked together. And it's really interesting because Jenkins actually has a chapter in his book where he talks about the Wysocki brothers, Wysocki siblings, and the Matrix. And these were one of Dave's heroes. So there was really this just sort of natural, natural fit. So I began to make links in this complex web or network of ideas and practices, and really began to see how it fit together. And I started also then to see how it fit together in the field. Now, at the time, the field, when I started this, was really just beginning to make, I guess, the translingual turn or really the global turn. And so I was still really having a hard time situating what I was observing and trying to understand. I was having a hard time situating it in the field. But as the field developed and a vocabulary developed, and I sort of began to develop a vocabulary myself, or finding a way of sort of talking about his story. And there were many, many people who sort of influenced my thinking, but ultimately it was probably maybe three. One was Rebecca Lorimer Leonard's notion of rhetorical attunement. And it just occurred to me as I was watching Dave interact with all these texts and engage in this textual poaching, is he was really developing a sense of attunement to language, to identity, and to the ways that he was sort of positioned in the world. In addition, Kevin Rusin's work informed me. Kevin writes about literacy practice as outside of class and the way they work inside of class. And I actually know Kevin way back. He was in graduate school. And one of the first things that I read produced by any graduate student there before it was even published was his work on Charles. And so in that work, he sort of does a lot of that type of work. And so that really had stuck with me as well. And then finally, Paul Pryor, who talks about the notion of not working, who also was my advisor, and he also is closely linked to Jody, of course, Shipka's work. So there was a natural fit there. And so I started to make my own sort of complex web as well and just gradually fit all this together. But it went through many iterations, many journals, and many, many conversations. And ironically, interestingly, Jonathan, you actually had reviewed my first C's piece, Composition 2.0, and it looks very different in print than it originally did. And I think that you, in fact, for that article, helped to clarify a lot of my thinking. And interestingly, as I was struggling with this, because it really focused so much on transmedia, I was had gotten back in contact with you at one point, thinking, who can sort of help me to work through this sort of web of ideas? Now, at the time, for whatever reason, I can't remember why, we didn't connect. You had offered to, but
I barely remember. Yeah, it's interesting.
It didn't happen, and so interestingly,
that was a while ago.
It was a long process. But interestingly, then, so the conversation ended up happening through the review process, and I think that review process also helped me to really fine tune and finally really focus and hone in on my argument.
That's a great story in so many ways, particularly about the how a scholarly project might sit with us for a long time and develop over time.
Yeah,
I'm really taken with how you bring together kind of transmediality, translinguality, mm-hmm. and multimodality, which is obviously a word I'm really interested in. You use the words web and network, and I think you probably mean those things not just as metaphors, but also materially. Like there are actual networks and mm-hmm. computer networks at play as well in sort of global reach of writing and composing and whatever those things might mean right now. What would you say to a kind of composition instructor right now who would ask you, okay, I'm working with an international student. How can I mobilize some of your insight, Steve, to work more productively or generatively with international students who are coming from different language backgrounds? So and I know that it seems like a completely unfair question. And it's one that I'm asking myself on my campus right now, so selfishly. How do we work? How do we mobilize translinguality and multimodality to work better with our international students?
I mean, I suppose my first reaction as I was listening to you, I had sort of a process. And I guess my first reaction is, I suppose ultimately, I don't, even though it's written as translingual and transnational, I actually see this as just relevant for work with all students, whether they're you know, and the framework is one that's simply, in my sense, grounded in sort of sociocultural approach or almost a Bakhtinian approach, a situated approach really to understanding language. So whether the students is a translingual student in quotes or you know, whatever their linguistic repertoire is, really the approach, I suppose, would be the same. So having said that, in terms of the notion of translingual, or maybe there are some bigger gaps, and so I guess sort of as Horner talks about, but or what Michael Agar would talk about as a rich point, we're really trying to use understanding or misunderstanding as a way into a broader understanding that there may, even though there's a logic there, it may be a wider cultural logic, and that notion that we have to really try and build a framework to understand. So it's really that sense of trying to use difference as a deeper way into understanding language and how we can leverage students' differences, both for understand our own understanding as well as the class. And I suppose that the only distinction I would make maybe with what Horner's doing or an extension or what Connor Garaj is, I think I push much more strongly on other modalities. So not simply looking at language, but looking, have students into the class, bring in, you know, advertisements, images, looking at gestures. And that, I think, is a gesture towards a sort of broader framework, really a more holistic understanding, but really focused around difference.
You know, it's interesting because I think we often assume that gestures are transcultural. They're probably not, you know, that it's not just our language use, which is culturally specific, but even how one gestures, which seems so embodied and quote unquote natural.
Yeah, even the word uptake itself, yeah, which is by the linguist, uptake is physical. You're literally picking something up. So, right.
Definitely. Jens?
Steve, I want to kind of ask you about the objects, right? I mean, the things that you kind of show us in your article. It was really fun read in that way that you had that, I mean, as the reader, I really got to see this stuff. But it sounds like from your first meeting with Dave that he was just sharing a lot of stuff with you from the get-go. But as a researcher, I'm wondering, how did you kind of, one, maybe keep track of all that he was sharing with you, but did you find yourself kind of asking to see particular kinds of things, or was he just so willing to share that it really didn't matter? I mean, I guess I'm just really from that kind of methodological point of view, how did you go about really just collecting these sorts of things and then weaving them together ultimately in your article, in your analysis?
Yeah, that's a good question. but it was really a case of follow the actors. I mean, he wanted to talk about this, and the fact that he did, and the fact that he wanted to do this in English, you know, the way that we were positioned said something about our wider position. And the fact that he so wanted to share this with me, and the ways that he was constructing me and identifying me, the fact that I was from a university, the fact that I was an American, the fact that I spoke English, that somehow by sharing this, that for him, I think, was some form of validation. That here I was, I'm teaching English, and I was interested in his writing itself, so in his own writing. And I thought it was fascinating. And so he really just wanted to share it. And so I just kept letting him share it. Now, as that process happened, I had to make sense of it. And how did I develop a focus? And one of the things that became a focus for me was the military. And the military became a focus for a lot of different reasons because of all the things that indexes in terms of the wider struggles within Israel. That Dave's story then started to tell a wider story, not only his own story, but also a wider one. There's all sorts of interesting mixing that happens in his story, but I think because of Israel, is the fact that it's Israel, it's a complex blend of old and new, and there are lots of different tensions, and you can see those being played out. So the military became one sort of key focal point. So I started to select stories that were linked to the military. It was really then, another key aspect was, another key aspect were things that Jenkins is talking about related to textual poaching. I was looking for instances when he's poaching, when the military is there. Things began to sort of converge, would be the answer. But the military became one key frame, and transmedia became another. And I started to look at places where those overlapped and started to pull those out and see how those fit together.
Where is this research taking you now? Are you going to do follow-up with him, or are you planning to expand this line of research into other subjects? Where are you going?
Well, the research in terms of Dave, in terms of short answer would be that, I mean, I'm really, in Israel, I was actually looking at a lot of different across context. And so, Dave was almost a side focus that became, I thought because the interviews were all in English, it would actually be easier. Instead, it was much harder. And I have a lot of other types of data. So I'm actually moving more into looking at high tech ecosystems and things of that nature, but with some of the same principles in informing what I'm doing. I think if there's a gap, and I can imagine what people will, I'm thinking about it, will there be a critique of this, or what will be the critique when people start to read this? And so one of the things, of course, is that I think will end up being a critique is this takes place, for instance, in the West Bank. There's another part that's here where he's by the border wall, sort of bordering Israel, sort of proper, and the West Bank. And so you can see a lot of this on the borders and the fringes, and it's at the fringes of the story, but it's really not at the center of the story. And of course, that is a central story to a lot of what's happening in Israel. So even as I move back into high tech, I'm going to push sort of some of those aspects more into, I think, the center of the story, more things related to conflicts, both in Israel. And Israel is not just a conflict between, say, Israel and West Bank and Gaza, but there's lots of tensions within Israel itself. And I think I'm trying to try and sort of sort through more of those tensions. So I think generally, though, that's the direction I'll be moving.
It's fascinating, Steve. We've been talking with Stephen Freyberg, Pretty Bullets, Tracing Transmedia, Translingual Literacies of an Israeli Soldier Across Regimes of Practice. Read it in the September 2017 CCC. Thanks, Steve. We really appreciate chatting with you.
Okay, thank you.